Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWP Radio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
Tonight's episode of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today for a free audiobook and a free, absolutely positively free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Remember to include that /PWP Radio so they know we sent you. Once again, audibletrial.com/PWP Radio. Everybody who signs up helps support the show. Thank you very much and enjoy Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Everybody, I hope everybody's having a good week, a good June in general. Welcome to PWP Pro Wrestling Powerhouse episode number 81. And today we're going to be talking about, first of all, we're going to review, go through Ring of Honor's Best in the World pay-per-view last Sunday. Then we're also going to talk about the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which is coming up this Sunday. And we're also going to be talking about some of the latest upcoming things coming on in TNA right now. A lot of big announcements for TNA today. So, but first things first, if you'd like to call in and have your opinion heard, if you want to voice your opinion or you just want to, you know, shoot the breeze, call in number is 760-888-5749. Again, the call in number is 760-888-5749. Don't be shy. Go ahead and call in. I'm not one of those callers. I'm not one of those guests that's just going to mute you just because I don't agree with you or whatever. So feel free to call in. So anyway, first things first, let's go ahead and let's get this Ring of Honor review out the way. Ring of Honor had their Best in the World pay-per-view, which is live on pay-per-view now. So normally, you know, Ring of Honor would have their internet pay-per-views, but now that the WWE is having the network and stuff, many of the cable providers dropped WWE from their pay-per-view subscription. So that kind of left a slight open for other people to jump in. And so Ring of Honor took advantage of that, and they made their pay-per-view debut last Sunday. It was at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds Sports Arena in Nashville, Tennessee, June 22nd, 2014. And it was the Ring of Honor Best in the World pay-per-view. All in all, it was a good show. I've been watching Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor, for the most part, for me, I'm still learning. I'm not going to say I'm a familiar fan, but basically I've been watching Ring of Honor since the start of this year on a full-time basis is what I'm trying to say. I've watched Ring of Honor from time to time over the years, but this year at the beginning of 2014, I decided to commit to Ring of Honor very seriously, and now I've watched every episode from the very first week of 2014 to today. I've seen all their pay-per-views so far. Overall, it was a solid show. It wasn't, like, fantastic. It wasn't, like, They've had better pay-per-views in the past, but this one was by no means bad. There wasn't a bad match on the card. Everything was pretty solid. So let's go through the card right quick. ACH, he won the six-man Mayhem opening matchup, defeating Caprice Coleman, Datarius Thomas, B.G. Wiltmer, Tommaso Ciampa, and want to be in the opening matchup. It was a very exciting match. It went 12 minutes. ACH, he's a very exciting guy. He kind of has this street fighter feel to him. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Elix Skipper and Shelton Benjamin. I haven't really heard much of his promo work, but he's very exciting in the ring, and it's definitely nice to see a young up-and-coming guy to, you know, get another shot for the television championship. The next match was Jay Lethal defending his television championship against Matt Taven with Truth Martini handcuffed to the ring post. The story here, if you're not familiar with Matt Taven or Ring of Honor in general, is Truth Martini has this little thing called the Book of Truth. He always wears red. He kind of has like a devil philosophy. Essentially, like, people sell their souls to listen to his guidance and his teachings, and Matt Taven was with Truth Martini for some time. He was the longest reigning TV champion, but eventually he lost and stuff. So now Taven, he's on his own. He dumped Truth Martini, and around the time that Taven dumped him, Jay Lethal has since turned heel and, you know, sold his soul or whatever. So now he's working for Martini, and so this match was basically like Matt Taven was trying to see if he can become TV champion and get it done without the help of Jay Lethal. But, you know, Truth Martini is always going to be there for ringside interference, and so they were able to handcuff him to a ring. But, yeah, the match was good. I'm a really big fan of Jay Lethal's finisher, the lethal injection, the cartwheel, or flip into the front flip into the ropes and then reverses that into a cutter. It's a really cool finisher. I can only imagine how long it took him to perfect that move. Eventually, Jay Lethal, he's able to get the win because Martini, he didn't want to be handcuffed, and he sort of, like, kept indirectly interfering, distracting Taven. I mean, you guys know the deal there. We've seen it a dozen times before in wrestling. So, but Lethal won, and we're pretty sure to see that this feud is going to continue. Next match was Cedric Alexander against Roderick Strong, and in a submission match. This is a pretty good match. I really like the feud, you know, the decade. They're this group of guys that's been with Ring of Honor for a very long time, and Roderick Strong, he's part of that group in the decade. They feel like that, you know, wrestlers that leave and come back and leave and come back, they don't really respect Ring of Honor. So they have, like, this thing where they think they're better than everybody else. And they normally in Ring of Honor, you shake people's hands, but they don't shake hands at all. So this is a very exciting matchup. It was actually my favorite match on the card. And Cedric Alexander, he eventually defeats Roderick Strong in a very, very long match. It went over 16 minutes. It was very entertaining. And I'm a really big fan of Cedric, and I see big things for him in the future. The next match was the Briscoe brothers against Matt Hardy and Michael Bennett. They tried to get themselves DQ'd, or I think Michael Bennett came in there for a chair, but then the match was restarted, and it became a no-DQ tag match, and ladders and chairs and all types of other weapons were used. It was a fun match, and, you know, props to Matt Hardy for taking some of the crazy bumps in the match. But eventually the Briscoe brothers, they went over, so, you know, that's nice to see them win. The next match was Kevin Steen against Silas Young. A lot of people were expecting Kevin Steen to lose here because, you know, there's a lot of rumors going around that he's been signed to a possible developmental contract for, you know, NXT, so many fans were assuming that he was going to lose here. It was a good match, but in the end, Kevin Steen, he was victorious. He defeated Silas Young, and when the match is over, you know, Kevin Steen cut a promo. And he cut a promo, and in the promo, he was basically saying that he doesn't have that much time left. His contract's about to expire. So he hinted that, you know, he might be leaving Ring of Honor soon, but nothing definite. The fact that Kevin Steen, you know, said that when he didn't have to definitely shows you that there is, you know, some truth to it. He may well have signed a contract. But at the end of the promo, Silas Young came back in there and attacked him, so their feud is going to continue. Next, we had Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly against Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, no longer known as Bad Influence. They're just Daniels and Kazarian. So this is a cool match. I was a little nervous about what kind of reaction that Daniels and Kazarian would get, but they received very well. The fans were into them. And they adapted pretty good. The match was, it wasn't as good as I thought it'd be, but it wasn't bad. It was, Red Dragon were using a lot of heelish tactics, which I was sort of eh-ish, sort of. I don't really like that kind of stuff in Ring of Honor. I sort of expect that from other companies. I've always kind of liked Ring of Honor mostly just for, you know, having emphasis in wrestling. So I was kind of iffy about that. But, you know, it was still a good match still. And eventually Red Dragon goes over. The story that was told in the match was Kazarian, he did a move early on in the very beginning of the match, and he hurt his arm. So since he hurt his arm, it was Daniels that was getting in a lot of the offense, and so Kazarian, he got in, and he was eventually tapped out from that arm bar submission, and so Red Dragon, they retained their tag team championships. So, but it's definitely nice to see Daniels and Kazarian and Ring of Honor. The main event was Michael Elgin against Adam Cole for Ring of Honor Championship. This went 23 minutes, and this had probably one of the best false finishes I've seen for a very long time. To those of you that are not familiar, Michael Elgin, his finisher is the buckle bomb into a power bomb combo. He kind of does what Seth Rollins does. He slams you into the turnbuckle, and then you kind of like the whiplash of that makes you go forward, and then he hits you with a power bomb. And, you know, what I like about Ring of Honor is that these fans have streamers, so it's like when you come to the ring, fans throw streamers, and sometimes when you win a match, they throw streamers, and it's really cool. Streamers is a great way to see, like, who's over and who's not. And so Michael Elgin, he's defeated so many people with the buckle bomb, power bomb combo that as soon as he executed the move, on the two count, there were fans that were already, you know, throwing streamers in the ring, but Adam Cole kicked out of it, which was just really funny. It was a premature streamer, like many fans. Just, you know, they were so sure that Adam Cole wasn't going to kick out, but he did kick out. You know, eventually Matt Hardy and Michael Bennett, they were interfering in the ring, and then War Machine came out to assist them. And this is a very personal feud. I mean, Michael Elgin, he's known for having a mullet, and at a house show tour before the Best in the World pay-per-view, Adam Cole, he handcuffed Michael Elgin to the ropes and cut off his hair, and I think his wife or his girlfriend was in the ring or something like that, and put her in a figure four and stuff like that. So, you know, it was a very personal feud. But eventually Adam Cole, he hit a Canadian Destroyer, a crazy move, and Michael Elgin still kicked out. But in the end, he was able to finally hit the buckle bomb, power bomb combo, 1-2-3. So now your new Ring of Honor champion, Michael Elgin. Congrats to the guy. He's been chasing for quite some time. Every single time I see that dude on Ring of Honor in the past, he's always been chasing for the title. So to finally see him win the world championship, you know, that's definitely a good feeling. So congrats to him. In other news, earlier on in the show, a gentleman by the name of, and if I get his name wrong, I apologize. I know his first name is Quinn, and I think his second last name is this weird old word I can't pronounce. It's like Ojanaka or something like that. Anyway, he's a former NFL offensive lineman, and he's been in the NFL before, but he's been going under the name Moose. He's been working in some of Ring of Honor's developmental scenes for a bit. He's about 295 in pound weight and 6'5 in height. He's a big dude, African-American descent. And, you know, he's basically in Ring of Honor now, and he's trying to transition to becoming a wrestler. I hope everything works out for him. There's been a lot of successes, and there's been a lot of failures when it comes to football players trying to become wrestlers. We've seen it work for guys like Ron Simmons. We've seen it work for guys like Vader. But then you have, you know, for all your Ron Simmons and for all your Vaders, you have your Mongo McMichaels. So, you know, I hope it works out for him. I saw a match of him on one of the Ring of Honor shows. It was like a six-man tag match, and he looked good. And, you know, I wish nothing but the best for him. Overall, though, the Best in the World pay-per-view was good. If I had to give it, like, rating between 4 to 5 stars, I'd definitely give it about 3.5 stars, leading to 4. I mean, it was only $25. I'm not sure how much it was in the viewing area of other people, but I have Xfinity, so it was $25. So $25 for 3 hours of solid wrestling sounds like a good deal, in my opinion. So I was enjoying the show. They've had better shows in the past, but this show was definitely by no means bad, and, you know, and I was definitely a fan of it. So congrats to Ring of Honor for putting out a great show, and I wish them nothing but the best of luck in the future for their pay-per-views. All right, so this brings us to Money in the Bank. Well, there's a lot of news we got to discuss for Money in the Bank. There were some additions that were added on Raw last night. For the ladder match for the vacant WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Kane was added. I don't know why they added him. That just seems sort of random to me. They just sort of added him. But so as of now, you have Del Rio versus Bray Wyatt versus Cesaro versus John Cena versus Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns versus Sheamus versus Kane. So they announced Kane at the very end of the show. The main event of the night was a 3-on-4 handicap match, John Cena, Sheamus, and Roman Reigns against Randy Orton, Cesaro, Bray Wyatt, and Del Rio. And then at the end of the match, when Sheamus hit the bro kick for the victory, Kane came out and was just indiscriminately destroying people. And then Triple H just sort of came out and randomly announced Kane to be in the match, which, in my opinion, didn't really make any sense because Triple H is supposed to be on the side of Orton. So if you're adding Kane to the match, you're kind of hurting your own guy. I don't really get it. I think Kane being added is just unnecessary. I also think it's very annoying they keep adding in the word the Demon Kane. I mean, oh my goodness, Michael Cole says the Demon Kane so many times, it can be very annoying. But, you know, Kane, he's out in the match. I don't really suspect he's going to make that much of a difference. So this is going to be for the vacant championship. And so right now, just going through the names like we went through the last show, I don't believe that Rio's going to win. I don't believe that Bray Wyatt. It's not that I don't want Bray Wyatt to win the title. It's just I don't think a character like Bray Wyatt needs a title. He kind of reminds me of Raven or Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, guys like that. Really good charismatic talkers. They just don't need titles like that. I don't see Del Rio winning. I don't see Bray Wyatt winning. I don't see Kane winning. I don't see Orton winning. And I don't see Sheamus winning. So this narrows it down to Reigns, Cena, and Cesaro. They could put it on Cesaro, but I just don't think he's ready for it yet. But then, to be fair, Reigns isn't ready either. And God forbid they put it on Cena. But like I said last week, I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to predict that Reigns is going to be the winner of this match. They're pushing him very strong. Is he ready? No. Batista wasn't ready. Cena wasn't ready. Many people were not ready initially when they got their pushes. But if the fans are into him, you know, you just got to strike while the iron is hot. Of course, I'm sure Reigns won't win. That's just the feeling that I have. So that's it for the actual title match itself. The next match we have is the actual Money in the Bank ladder match. Now, on SmackDown of the previous week, Seth Rollins announced there was going to be a traditional ladder match. The briefcase is golden, so I thought they were going to go back to the old-fashioned black briefcase, but instead they've chosen to do the old-fashioned, well, not the old-fashioned, they've chosen to go the gold route instead. So, you know, that's cool, I guess. So Triple H comes out near the very beginning of the show, and what he does is instead of having qualification matches or a battle royale or something like that, he just announces people that are going to be in the match, which I know disappoints a lot of fans and stuff. It definitely adds more credibility to Money in the Bank when you qualify for it. But the people that were added to the match were Bad News Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Kofi Kingston, and Rob Van Dam. So that was the original match. And so what essentially happens later on is that RVD, he interrupts the promo. He interrupts this promo because Seth Rollins is in the ring, and RVD tells Seth that he doesn't think that he's being taken seriously. And then Seth takes a shot at RVD and says that, "I think that I would have taken you seriously if it was 2005. Then RVD mentions the injury that he gave Triple H at the first Elimination Chamber. So they end up having a match, and then, you know, it's a good match. It's going on even footing, and then halfway through the match, Dean Ambrose interferes on Seth Rollins and, you know, starts beating up Seth Rollins again. And so Dean Ambrose gets the mic and says that he might as well be put into the match because regardless if he is or isn't, he's going to interfere this Sunday at the pay-per-view. So Seth Rollins tells Triple H in a backstage segment that he wants Dean Ambrose inputted into the match simply because he doesn't want to get screwed over by him. And he would rather have him in an environment where he can control Ambrose. And so Triple H tells him that if this blows up in his face, then, you know, it's going to be on him. And Seth Rollins assures Triple H that he can do it. So now your match is Bad News Barrett versus Dean Ambrose versus Dolph Ziggler versus Jack Swagger versus Kofi Kingston versus Rob Van Dam versus Seth Rollins. So pretty stacked match, but alas, it gets more complicated. See, Bad News Barrett had a really good match with Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship, and Bad News Barrett won the match. However, it's been confirmed that he's injured, and I'm not going to consider this a spoiler because WWE themselves have posted this on their Facebook page. He suffers an injury that takes place at the SmackDown tapings that you're going to be seeing on Friday. Whether or not they're going to show the injury, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure the severity of the injury, but I do know that it is a shoulder injury, much like it was last time, and I know Jack Swagger was involved in it. I think Bad News Barrett was having a match with someone, and then, like, in the aftermath, Jack Swagger comes in. He gives Wade Barrett a very stiff kick or punch or something of that nature, which results in Barrett having an arm injury. So it sucks for him. This is the second injury. You know, Bad News Barrett, he seems to have this Ahmed Johnson curse because everyone remembers Ahmed Johnson. He was very athletic. He was very intimidating, and he was very over as Intercontinental Champion, and they were going to push him. But, you know, he just kept getting injured at the worst possible times. And, you know, then when he came back, guys like The Rock and Stone Cold were already established. So this is the second time. And the ironic thing about Bad News Barrett is this is the second time he suffered an injury before a possible Money in the Bank match. Because I remember hearing rumors that, you know, going into WrestleMania – 28. They were thinking about having a Money in the Bank match at that particular WrestleMania with Wade Barrett winning, but then he suffered an arm injury in that battle royale, and then they dropped it. And so here it is again, right before, the week of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and he suffers an arm injury again. I don't know if it's the same arm or a different arm. I'm going to imagine it's the same arm. So, and again, he's Intercontinental Champion. We don't know how serious the injury is, but if it is serious, then I imagine the Intercontinental Championship will be dropped again, and we'll have another tournament for it, just like we did before. So it's unfortunate for Bad News Barrett, no pun intended, but bad news for Bad News Barrett. So many fans are wondering, you know, if he cannot work the match, is there going to be a replacement for him, or will they just keep it at 7? WWE typically likes to – they don't really follow the less is more mentality. They typically like to have as many people as possible in these matches. So I imagine they'll put someone in the match. And, you know, so there you go. So, you know, get well soon to Bad News Barrett. Moving on to the rest of the card, you got Paige versus Naomi. Naomi and Paige had a really good match on main event, a match in which Naomi, she beat Paige 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. And it's very weird. They've been doing this thing with Cameron, the Funkadactyls. It's been very quiet. They're not giving it as much TV time as they should. I think it started at the last pay-per-view. I think it was Payback, and Paige beat Alicia Fox, and, you know, like one of those post-pay-per-view conferences or something like that. Cameron walked up to Paige and was basically like, you know, she was a heel sort of saying, like, who are you? What have you done to deserve being Divas Champion? So on and so forth. You know, I want a title match. I haven't got my opportunity. And then Paige was pretty much telling her, hey, if you want an opportunity, just say so. And so they had a match. And Cameron was running around like little scared girl the whole time. And eventually she loses. And you can – they're doing like this dissension, tension between Cameron and Naomi, because – while Cameron's doing all of this, Naomi's just sort of there, letting it happen, not really being the voice of reason. And when she beat Trinity, I said, wow, I'm getting their names confused. Total Divas, I'm sorry. When Naomi beats Paige at main event, Cameron goes in the ring and she just starts dancing around as if she won, when really it was Naomi that won the match. So they're definitely teasing something there. On Raw, you had Paige on commentary, Cameron on commentary, and Naomi had a really good match with Alicia Fox in which Naomi won. And the entire time, you know, Cameron's pretty much talking trash to Paige, and Paige was saying stuff like Naomi's the biggest threat that she's had to her title, et cetera, you know. And eventually Naomi wins, and when the match is over, Paige gets on the apron, poses with the Divas title, and then they shake hands, slap hands, whatever the respect thing, and so there you go. So you have Naomi against Paige. So Naomi, she's beaten Paige before, so there's a good chance that she'll win. But then at the same time, you got Cameron, who seems to be like, you can definitely see that she's going to be going heel very soon. She's already showing, you know, hints of it. Seeds are being planted. So if I had to guess, what's probably going to happen is there's one of three different scenarios they can do here. The first thing they can do is Cameron can do something that indirectly distracts Naomi, which leads to Paige winning. Or you could have Naomi getting ready to win the match and, like, say Paige taunts Cameron, and then Cameron just sort of, like, hits Paige, which then gets Naomi DQ'd, and Naomi can be like, you know, dude, what the fuck, you just got me DQ'd, you cost me a title match. You know, there's, you know, I definitely, since Naomi has, it's not like Naomi has not beaten Paige, they've shown that Naomi can beat her clean. So I definitely see some type of run-in from Cameron. You know, either way you look at it, the Funkadactyls, it definitely seems to be coming towards an end. And I'm sure they'll use it for a story in Divas Season 3, because they love to, you know, use whatever the Divas are doing and plug that on the Divas show. So Funkadactyls are very popular, so it'll be a shame to see them go, but at the same time, you know, Naomi is so much better than this gimmick, so I'm happy to see her move on to other things. I'm going to go ahead and predict Paige to retain here just because of Naomi just doing something. Oh, you know, now that I think about it, I didn't give a prediction for the Money in the Bank match, the actual traditional one. Well, seeing as how Dean Ambrose is added in, I think he's going to be in the match just to, you know, I think he's going to be in the match to prevent Seth Rollins from winning. So I was going to actually predict Bad News Barrett, but once again, he was injured. So I'll just go ahead and predict Seth Rollins. He seems like the safe pick here. This brings us to our last match, the Usos versus the Wyatt family. The Usos have this thing where lately they've been saying Uso crazy, which I think is just sort of silly, but it's whatever. The Usos have had, I won't say they've had a good run. I mean, their run has been moderate. But, you know, I mean, they've had the straps. They've proved themselves. And I can definitely see them losing to Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. If they don't lose, if they somehow retain the titles, I'll still be happy. But I would not be surprised if they lost. But I'm just going to go ahead and predict for the Wyatt family to go over and win this particular matchup. And so far, those are the only matches that they have confirmed for the show. So there's only four matches confirmed. There's the actual ladder match for the world title. There's a traditional ladder match for the there's a traditional Money in the Bank match. There's the tag team title match, and then there's the Divas match. So, you know, only four matches. I'm sure that we'll see something down the line. Anywho, speaking of the Divas, as we were talking about earlier, let's talk about the send-off for Vicky Guerrero last night. Vicky Guerrero, this was so random. It was, you know, I mean, it's cool. It was a tribute to Eddie, but, like, it was really random. Like, it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, this was like a week, two-week build. How this basically happened was last week there was, like, a random segment with Roman Reigns and Vicky, and Roman Reigns was telling Vicky that he should be put into a battle royale to determine who's going to be the last slot for the Money in the Bank match. And then Vicky told Roman she had to get coffee or something, and she ended up, like, getting coffee for Stephanie McMahon, and Roman put something in the coffee, which then made Stephanie puke later on. And so then at the very beginning of the show last night, or not last night because it's Wednesday, I'm still thinking we're on Tuesdays or on Wednesdays, at the very beginning of Raw, Stephanie comes out, calls out Vicky, and she's going to fire her because of that. And then Vicky says, like, you know, I'm sorry, blah, 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 I apologize. And then Stephanie's saying that you can keep your job if you beat me one-on-one in the match. And so then Vicky Guerrero just cuts a promo mentioning Eddie, saying stuff like, Eddie taught me how to lie, cheat, and steal, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Eddie chant goes off. And, you know, I understand they're just trying to find a way to send off Vicky. It just seemed very random out of nowhere. You know, there's hardly any bill for this. But, hey, it was cool. I mean, it's nice they gave Eddie a tribute and mentioned him before. They even let her use Eddie's chant. You know, it was a long time since we've heard Viva La Raza. That was pretty cool. I couldn't tell you the last time I heard that theme. So I thought it was going to be a straight-up wrestling match, but it wasn't a wrestling match. It was like there's this pool with a substance in it. I don't know if it was mud or what it was, but whoever gets thrown into the pool loses the match. And so a bunch of heel divas came and tried to throw Vicky in the pool. And then, you know, Vicky ends up putting all of them through the pool. And finally, Stephanie puts her in the pool, so Vicky loses. So per the stipulation, Vicky's fired. Then Vicky pushes Stephanie in the pool. So, you know, there you go. It didn't do much for me, but, hey, some saw it was a nice tribute for Eddie. So, you know, whatever. Thanks for the memories, Vicky, I guess. She definitely did a good job. She was a great heel character, a great authority figure, and so on and so forth. So, she definitely proved that, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily have to have experience in the business. You can still have, you know, be a good on-screen authority character and stuff. So it was definitely very cool. So, you know, thanks again to Vicky. All right, that's pretty much most of the WWE talk that we're going to have tonight. I think we've discussed most of it. I'd say more about WWE, but unfortunately they don't have much. Oh, well, there is one other topic. Daniel Bryan, he's been confirmed to appear on the pre-show for Money in the Bank. I doubt it's going to be in person. This is probably going to be like via satellite or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what her exact, what his exact particular role is going to be. More than likely, just going to interview him via satellite and stuff. So, you know, that's cool. So, again, that'd be nice to see Brian again. But other than that, we really don't have much to say for WWE. So now we're going to go ahead and go into the TNA stuff. But before we go into TNA stuff, let's just take a small break. We'll be back in a few minutes. right, and we're back. Thanks for waiting. And now we're going to talk about the big part of the show. It's funny to say that TNA is the big part of the show, but they've just been doing so much lately. A lot of big announcements are going on. First, let's talk about the obvious, in case you have not known. It's been confirmed the six-sided ring has won the poll, and it will be returning on the New York Impact tapings. In fact, there are fans already that are already in attendance of the show. I'm not sure if it's going on live now as we speak or as I'm talking to you, but if you check the official Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Facebook page, you'll see a picture. One of our administrators already posted a photo of the six-sided ring, and it looks good. It looks good. It looks a little bit it looks the arena that they're in, it looks good. There's a lot of fans that are there. And I can't exactly put my finger on it, but it looks, the ring itself, it doesn't look like the same six-sided ring from before. It looks slightly different. Around the edges, it looks slightly smaller. But, it's back already, so the six-sided ring is there. I know a lot of fans were giving reasons and legitimate arguments for why the four-sided ring should stay and stuff, and I like the fact, and I appreciate the fact that there are many fans and wrestlers giving legitimate arguments for why they should stay the four sides. I remember when I first saw the poll, I thought people voting four sides would just be trolls and stuff. So, you know, I think it's cool. But I'll say this week what I said last week. To me, it's all about a company's identity. TNA does not have an identity. They don't, you know. You ask yourself questions. Who's the top face? Who's the top heel? Like, you don't know, because they've just been they've been all over the place for so many years. It's confusing. But the one of the few consistent things they had was their six-sided ring. That was what drew in many fans, because it was different. And ever since they've lost that six-sided ring, they've really yet to find that one consistent thing. And, you know, that six-sided ring was the consistent thing. So, you know, in that respect, it's cool that they brought it back. You know, hopefully, you know, workers like Austin Aries and EC3 don't get too salty over it. I mean, I understand why they would be frustrated. I mean, you know, it's their body, of course. They're the ones that are working in the ring. They're the ones that are taking the bumps. So I can understand why they would feel frustrated, you know. So, but the six-sided ring, it has returned, and we will be seeing it at the New York Impact taping. So not the ones in Impact tomorrow, for instance. It'll still be the four-sided ring, I believe. I believe we're going to be seeing the six sides when they start the New York stuff, which we'll be seeing later on in the summer. So, but that's not the big news. The big news for TNA, and this is a really, really big lightning bolt that came out of nowhere. The location for Bound for Glory has been revealed. Get this, you would never guess where it's going to be. Bound for Glory is going to be in Tokyo, Japan this year. That's right, you have not heard this wrong, you're not hearing things. Tokyo, Japan, that is where Bound for Glory is going to be at this year. Again, this was posted also on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse page. You'll see a picture of Dixie Carter and the Great Muta. So I know they're really doing their best to increase their relationship with Wrestle One and New Japan Pro Wrestling. But from what I understand, Jeff Jarrett's promotion, Global Force Wrestling, he's also working very hard to establish the same relationship as well. So, but yeah, Bound for Glory is going to be in Tokyo, Japan. That's very, very interesting. You know, first and foremost, everybody remembers when we think about foreign pay-per-views, the one that always comes to mind is SummerSlam 1992 in the UK. It was a great show, great fans. To this day, the exact number of fans has never really been realized. There's been different numbers for how many people were there at that arena. I've seen like at least five different numbers on how many people were there. International fans, they come in really big waves. Right now, as I'm talking about it, I'm going to look up SummerSlam 1992 again, because it's been a very long time since I've looked up at the attendance rate. Let me see what it says. Okay, the attendance one that I'm looking at is 80,355. That may or may not have been the actual number, but it was a large amount of fans, as you can imagine. Foreign fans, they don't get wrestling that much. They don't, especially, you know, wrestling from American companies. So whenever WWE or TNA or Ring of Honor, when they go overseas, there's always, you know, a lot of fans. You know, I mean, TNA has proved this. Every time they go to the UK, they always get a big turnout and stuff. So, but one of the main reasons why wrestling companies don't go overseas anymore is that we exist in an era of the internet. You know, stuff gets spoiled now. I mean, you can barely be surprised at what's going to happen on SmackDown or Impact because they're taped and pre-recorded in advance. And so, you know, many promoters, they've been against having a pay-per-views overseas because people that are there, they're just going to leak it. It's going to go online, and then people are going to know the results. And so if they know the results, they're not going to pay for the said show. And then you also have the time difference. You know how it might be, for instance, like where I am right now, it's 9:39 p.m. I'm in the southeastern portion of the United States of America. And when you have, you know, wrestling shows in different parts of the world, the time can be different drastically. So, like, for instance, right now in Japan, I believe it's like, I think it should be morning. I think it's like probably 10:30-something a.m. in the morning right now. So that's going to be a dramatic time difference. So how is that even going to work? So what could be 8 o'clock for us could just be a totally different time for them. So how TNA plans on pulling this off, I'm not exactly sure. Another question is Bound for Glory, TNA's biggest show, is typically in October, and from what I understand, TNA, they haven't renewed their show on Spike TV, so wouldn't they need to, like, build up their shows on TV first to even get to that point? So to have Bound for Glory in Japan, you're basically going under the assumption that you'll have TV to build up to it because they have yet to re-sign with Spike. So, but, yeah, I mean, international-wise, it's good business. TNA is actually very popular internationally. It's a good business. It's also a good exposure because you're getting your name out there. And let's be honest here. You know, TNA, they've gotten to the point where they have to try something different because what they're doing isn't working. You know, they'll have a pay-per-view at any location, and sometimes whether it's not being advertised that well or just lack of interest, many fans just don't show up. But foreign fans, you know, they don't care. They're hardcore, passionate fans and stuff, and they're going to come. So that's a good decision. To TNA's credit, they have been doing a lot of media appearances for the New York tapings. I've seen a lot of media appearances from EY, from Bully, from Velvet, from MVP, from Joe. So to TNA's credit, they have been doing that. So getting more on the New York tapings, many talents have been confirmed to appear. Rhino has been confirmed to appear. Tommy Dreamer has been confirmed. Brian Cage has been confirmed. Homicide has been confirmed. Amazing Red has been confirmed. There might be some I'm missing out. Let me see. Ah, yes, and Loki. Loki has also been confirmed. So Loki, Homicide, Brian Cage, and all these guys have been confirmed for Destination X. The Destination X, you know, they've turned Destination X, they've turned the pay-per-view. What they've done is, like, they've dedicated an entire Impact to it, kind of like a Clash of the Champions-like feel. So Brian Cage, I'm not familiar with Brian Cage. I think he was, like, in WWE Developmental and was also in PWG, but I've never seen him work before. I'm not familiar with him. Brian Cage, Homicide, Low-Key, Amazing Red, The Great Muta, he's also been confirmed to appear. Matt Hardy's going to show up and reform the Hardy Boys. I'm hearing rumors that he might work a match with the Dudleys, but if I recall correctly, the Dudleys retired. But again, you know, who takes retirement seriously in wrestling unless her name is Shawn Michaels? So, you know, they're pretty much throwing everything in the kitchen sink. They're doing everything they can. TNA, this makes me feel a little better. They recognize that, you know, this is a very big opportunity for them. Is go for broke. They got to do what they can to really, really, really get the ball going. And, you know, I'm happy to see that TNA is, you know, showing some form of motivation going on. So, But there's a lot of stuff going on in TNA. Bobby Lashley, again, he's the first African-American champion for TNA, not counting R-Truth, Ron Truth Killings, who was an NWA two-time world champion. So between that and the New York tapings, things are TNA's creating a lot of buzz. This is the most buzz that I've seen circulate about TNA for not really since Hogan came when back in 2010. This is the most buzz I've seen for TNA since then. So again, I always wish TNA the best of luck. I hope it works out for him. I don't want to hear any spoilers. I'm not reading any spoilers, but I'm just seeing many pictures of the event. I'm seeing fans that are there live in attendance posting on Facebook, I'm assuming via cell phone, and many people are saying that the fans are very rowdy, it's a hot crowd, and that it was a good turnout. So good for TNA. You know, but they have more than one taping, and they have to do it consistently. So, you know, shout-outs to TNA, and I hope everything works out for them. So overall, we have some other minor stuff to talk about. Josh Matthews, the former WWE commentator, announcer, he's been released. His reasons for being released, I'm not exactly sure. I hear that it's for budget cost reasons. They seem to be very fond of that Renee Young person, so more than likely she'll take a spot. So sucks to see Josh go. Kind of random, but, you know, what else can you do here? But other than that, though, we've pretty much exhausted all the topics here. We probably won't have a post show for Money in the Bank because, again, Bruce Hart has his own show now. So, you know. But thanks again for listening to PWP Radio. We've exhausted all the topics and stuff, and we'll definitely see how things go. We might not have an episode next week. Might wait a bit to see what other news circulates out there, what's going on. But if something happens of really significant importance, then we'll have a show next week. And if it doesn't happen, then we'll see you next week. But I don't want to interfere with Bruce Hart's show as well, because there's so many other shows on the PWP brand now. So anyway, thanks for watching, guys. I hope everybody has a good week. This is Toph signing out, and I hope you guys have a great week. Later.